Part 4, Continuing the Tradition. As America moved into the 20th century, new misrepresentations of the Constitution began to affect the federal government's ability to function as intended by the Founders' Treatise. To compound the problem, America experienced domestic and external changes of a magnitude never before seen. During this time, Congress proposed thousands of amendments, but only a small number made it to the states. The states then ratified just 12 during this period. The frequency of states calling for a regional or national convention continued to dwindle. As a result, people in states began to lose touch with their tradition and history for solving problems. Nonetheless, the tradition continued, but in a subdued way until the late 20th and early 21st century, when citizen interest began rising again. They were interested in things like the Liberty Amendments, a balanced budget amendment, and term limits, among others. Today, many Americans recognize that Washington, D.C. is functionally broken. Therefore, it is essential for citizens to understand what is specifically broken and the repair options available to them. Constitutional scholars point to the Commerce and Welfare Clauses as the keys. Chapter 41, The Reason We Must Continue. According to the U.S. Treasury Department, 2017 marked the 60th consecutive year that the federal government increased America's annual debt. Why, U.S., can't we stop Congress from this out-of-control spending? And why don't they find and eliminate inefficiencies like American families do when their income and spending becomes unbalanced? We now try solving the federal problems by voting in the right people, but the spending and taxing just continue. The source. What is the source of this continuing dysfunction in our federal government's behavior? Below are several examples of how bad behavior led to dysfunction. The first two, the Constitution's Commerce and Welfare Clauses, are pointed to by scholars as the primary source and authorization for our federal dysfunction. The Commerce Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 states, quote, "The Congress shall have power to regulate commerce among the several states." During the founding era, the definition of commerce meant trafficking and trading of goods, nothing more. In the 1930s, the court shifted its interpretation of the modest Commerce Clause and expanded its interpretation to include trade, such as agriculture, manufacturing, and production intended for interstate sale. By 1942, in Wickard v. Filburn, the court went even further, unimaginably allowing the government to regulate non-commercial activity via the Commerce Clause. The court allowed Congress to shamelessly unleash the word commerce, allowing the clause to imply its authority over everything. The original clause's intent was to allow Congress to regulate trade between the states. This then grew to include all forms of trade, manufacturing, retail, etc. Then, in Wickard, it expanded it to include such things as divorce, child custody, driver's licenses, local zoning, public schools, rodent protection, and so on. Filburn was a small Ohio farmer in the 1930s who was fined for not selling his own wheat on the open market. To mitigate his losses due to the low price for wheat that year, he and his family decided to consume it themselves, causing the fine and subsequent court ruling. Recently, the prairie dog population in the state of Utah has doubled due to efforts by the biologists at Fish and Wildlife Services. To secure their future, they attempted to move them away from residential neighborhoods, schoolyards, and cemeteries to a permanently protected conservation area. But the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling overturned a previous court approval. The appeals court argued that the Commerce Clause could be stretched to reach non-economic activities that affect any species. Mike Lee and Jonathan Wood wrote in the Wall Street Journal, November 4, 2017, quote, In its ruling, the appeals court embraced a theory of federal power beyond any the Supreme Court has ever accepted. It held that if Congress adopts a comprehensive scheme to address some issue, then any regulation that furthers that purpose is constitutional under the Commerce Clause, even if it is unrelated to commerce. Were that theory to prevail, there would be no limit to what Washington could regulate. End quote. The Constitution is based on common law that assumes anything not expressly prohibited is legal. The framers' concept of a limited government was for governments to not pre-legislate the lives of a free people beyond its enumerated powers. Because of this expanded interpretation, the Interstate Commerce Clause has become the primary source of federal power in Washington, D.C. The Welfare Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, states, "The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes to provide for the common defense and general welfare." It does not say anything about taxing and redistributing the funds as it sees fit. James Madison even argued against that concept in Federalist Number 41. He suggests there's a fine line between a strong government and liberty. But the Congress does tax and redistribute funds with entitlements such as Social Security. In fact, the court has stated that Social Security is not a government insurance program, implying it could be a legalized Ponzi scheme because it redistributes money from workers to retirees. The Supreme Court ruled in Helvering v. Davis, 1937, that Social Security was not a contributory insurance program, saying, quote, "The proceeds of both the employee and employer taxes are to be paid into the Treasury like any other internal revenue generally, and are not earmarked in any way." End quote. Social Security holds no property rights for the contributors and is just a revenue source on one side and a welfare program on the other. The crucial conclusion here is that since Helvering in 1937, our Washington, D.C. politicians have embraced unconstitutional wealth transfer. In America's first 130 to 140 years of avidly following the Constitution, the three federal branches maintained a belief in a limited government. It did not begin taking advantage of the Welfare Clause until the 1930s. In 1917, for example, Congress had the opportunity when it decided to control alcohol. However, rather than easily passing a law prohibiting alcohol as approved by the Welfare Clause, it proposed an amendment to the Constitution. Congress recognized its limitations and restrained itself in following the Constitution's enumerated powers of Article 1, Section 8. Irresponsible fiscal management. The U.S. debt is over $20 trillion and climbing, and that does not include America's long-term entitlement obligations. That means every taxpayer in 2017 owes over $168,000. The ratio of debt to GDP is 105%, ranking the U.S. fifth in the world, right behind Japan, Greece, Italy, and Portugal. The debt to GDP ratio over the first 130 years of our history averaged below 15%. Spikes came from wars. It rose in the 1790s to cover the Revolutionary War debt that was paid off by the 1830s. It spiked again during the Civil War and World War II, but has been on the rise since. But after the passage of both the 16th Amendment, income tax, and 17th Amendment, state oversight of U.S. Senate, lost in 1913, the trend began rising slowly to the 1970s and 80s period, when it accelerated astronomically. Quote, "To preserve our independence, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. I wish it were possible to obtain a single amendment taking from the federal government the power of borrowing." End quote. That's from Thomas Jefferson. Uncontrolled debt is detrimental to America's security. It inhibits its ability to fund its needs because of growing annual interest payments. The only way America is to get out of debt is to first balance the budget. And since 1930, Congress has been motivated to balance the budget only five times. Congress paid down the debt by $22 billion in those years. With access to billions and trillions of our tax money, Congress is not motivated to curb its spending or debt ceiling increases. Because Congress does not want to stop its taxing, debt, and spending problem, the people and their states will have to fix it for them. Federal agency abuse. The Federal Register logs new rules and regulations daily. Annually updated, they have totaled over 90,000 pages covering every imaginable rule and regulation that Congress or federal agencies codify. Over the last 8 to 10 years, the government has required over 600 rules be implemented that cost over $100 million each. The annual cost to Americans has been estimated at $2 trillion, about $15,000 per household, by the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Here are a few examples of abuses by unregulated federal agencies, some 360-plus of them, in Washington, D.C., who are not held accountable by Congress, much less the American people. The purpose here is not to disparage what could be valuable services to the American people, but to offer a window into the modus operandi of the federal bureaucracy's unregulated regulating. In 2015, the Environmental Protection Agency decided to expand Congress's 1972 Clean Water Act of regulating pollution in, quote, navigable waters of the U.S., end quote, to include the waters of the U.S. That meant the agency decided they weren't given enough jurisdiction, and now they should disregard a constitutional law by adding unnavigable waters such as streams, ponds, estuaries, irrigation ditches, and even puddles to their regulatory purview. The immediate effect was to reduce property rights of American citizens. The EPA essentially converted the states from sovereigns into sub-agencies of the federal government. Affected citizens had little recourse. This was an overreach by a government agency to modify its own charter without congressional approval. An appeals court halted the actions in 2016, and an executive order in 2017 reversed the agency's action of malfeasance. The lawlessness of this action is evidence of a bureaucracy stepping outside of the boundaries of the Constitution. The EPA answers to the executive branch, but congressional oversight has little effect on one of the more powerful agencies in government. Every ingredient in your Thanksgiving turkey dinner is federally regulated. Cranberries, Title VII, Part 929, establishes a marketing committee overseen by the U.S. Department of Agriculture to set quotas on the volume of cranberries shipped to handlers from growers in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New Jersey, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Oregon, Washington, and Long Island. The grower allotments help to ensure that the price of cranberries remains artificially high. Falling Midwest crop prices need a free trade response. The feds buy $20 million of cheese to prop up prices. Rockwell City, Iowa. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced last week it will spend $20 million to buy 5,500 tons of cheese from American dairy farmers. The food will be given to families in need, but charity is only a byproduct. The purpose of the purchase, according to a USDA press release, is reducing a cheese surplus and assisting the stalled marketplace for dairy producers whose revenues have dropped 35% over the past 2 years. That comes from the Wall Street Journal, September 3, 2016. Today's federal bureaucracy began with the new progressive movement, led by Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson, both espousing that social experts can and should make the decisions that regular Americans cannot. The bureaucracy they envisioned has morphed into what has become known today as the swamp or deep state, filled with so-called experts who are, it is claimed, more adept at the technical, social engineering of policy than is Congress or the American people. The colonial cry of no taxation without representation has morphed into no regulation without representation today. Federal term limits. 5,000 years ago, ancient Athenians determined that rotating politicians annually or holding them to a prescribed limit of time reduced corruption. During America's colonial period, several colonies experimented with term limits. Benjamin Franklin, James Madison, John Adams, and Thomas Jefferson, among them, supported congressional term limits. George Mason and others favored term limits during the Constitutional Convention and declared, quote, "Nothing is so essential to the preservation of a republican government as periodic rotation," end quote. However, limits were to be added by amendment. Colonial author and revolution historian Mercy Otis Warren warned that, quote, "There is no provision for rotation in the Constitution nor anything to prevent the perpetuity of office in the same hands for life, which by a little well-timed bribery will probably be done." There have been 110 combined senators and congressmen that have served in Congress, ranging from 36 to 59 years. In 2014, Ballotpedia reported the net worth of members of Congress compared to average citizens. The median American citizen saw his or her household net worth decrease from 2004 to 2012 by an annual rate of 0.94%, while members of Congress experienced a median annual increase of 1.55%. Members of Congress saw a total increase of $316.5 million in assets held by all members in the study. In addition, Congress was exempted from the ACA health care law by claiming each member to be a, quote, "small business" of under 50 employees. Congress also set up a secret slush account to cover their personal malfeasance costs. There have been 211 federal judges who have served terms ranging from 10 to 50 years. No Supreme Court justice has served over 40 years, but five have exceeded it through what is known as senior service. Federal justices in the high or low courts are there to interpret the Constitution using its words and its meaning as written. The court was intended by the founders to act as the milkstool's third leg of our checks and balances system. The 22nd Amendment of the Constitution has limited the term for presidents, but limits on terms for the legislative and judicial branches of American government are only likely to come from amendments proposed through the state-led Article 5 process.